Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue our conversation on the U.S. healthcare sector. With that, we are glad to have back with us Eric Ponicker, healthcare sector strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Eric, thank you for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners, our clients. Looking forward to our conversation.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Happy to be here. Good talking with you.
So, Eric, it's timely that you're joining us for today's conversation. I know our Chief Investment Office, the Equity Strategy Team, recently upgraded the U.S. healthcare sector to most preferred. So I think that's a good place to start. Can you begin by walking our listeners, our clients, through the investment thesis behind that shift?
Absolutely. So the strategy team views healthcare as the most attractive among the defensive sectors, subsectors. And, you know, it overall, that most preferred on healthcare serves to balance our other most preferreds, which are pro-cyclical, technology and industrials. And, you know, specific to healthcare, we see a general improving of healthcare end markets through the year and accelerating earnings growth for the sector broadly. And, you know, unlike 2023, last year, there's very little in the way of pandemic or post-pandemic hangover slowing growth in 24. In 23, there were a number of large companies that saw growth slow or even go negative because they were no longer benefiting from the same magnitude of COVID tailwinds in 23. So that's normalized for 24, and I think allows the healthcare sector, along with what are improving end markets in many cases, to really put up strong growth, both on an absolute and a relative basis.
So, Eric, diving into positioning a bit within U.S. healthcare at the moment, what are your preferred subsectors at this time?
Sure. So three. We'll start with MedTech, medical devices. There, you know, strong end markets continue. I mean, those are structurally strong end markets that certainly last year and so we expect this year we'll continue to see even better growth. A lot of that are procedure volumes, some of which is post-pandemic pent-up demand, and then some of which is structurally new products that are coming to market that are adding to growth. So, you know, we think that sector will continue to show strong growth as it has, with growth really for certain parts of the sector accelerating in 24, and we think that probably has some legs to go beyond just 24. Next would be life sciences tools. You know, there I mentioned sort of a COVID hangover. I think that sector in particular suffered from that in 23 and suffered to perform in 23. With that sort of normalizing, and what we see in particular is recovering end markets, some key recovering end markets for the life sciences tools sector. We think that's going to drive strong performance. Specifically, you know, the sector really struggled last year with weakness in sort of small cap biotech funding availability, and also in terms of large biopharma companies bringing down their pandemic inventory their inventory levels from pandemic peaks. And we think those both of those are in the process of normalizing. We're certainly seeing an improvement in small cap biotech funding in the equity capital markets so far this year and late last year. And then we think the inventory correction is mostly done, and frankly is inevitable anyway, as inventory corrections always are. So we think by the second half, that particular piece, the inventory correction at large biopharma, will have played out, and that the ordering patterns will resume or return back to their pre-pandemic levels, which should mean an acceleration of growth for the life sciences tools sector. You know, the last piece of uncertainty is really China for that sector, that subsector, and that's a tough one because there isn't a lot of visibility. But the exposure for most of the life sciences tools players is fairly limited. And I also think given the declines last year in the Chinese end markets, I have trouble seeing it get a lot worse. So between the limited exposure and probably, you know, nearing a bottom, I don't think that will be nearly as much of a drag. And with the other two components of the end markets improving, we think that the life sciences tools is well positioned. And then lastly, in terms of sectors we recommend, the managed care sector. And that's been a tougher call, and certainly in the last few months, not the right call from me. That group has struggled due to higher medical utilization. So to some extent, the other side of the coin from what we discussed on the medical device companies. We do think that that is somewhat transitory in terms of how it will impact margins at the MCOs, and that by the second half of this year, some of that pressure will moderate and that they'll be able to show margins and earnings that are consistent with guidance and really consistent more or less with what they've done in the past. And given where valuations are or have gotten to, we think that's sort of an attractive entry point now for managed care. And then lastly, we're still neutral on large biopharma. I think in that space, you know, there's really one theme that dominates, and that's obesity and then the availability of newer obesity drugs. There's a significant divergence of valuations within the sector, haves and have-nots, if you will, and that also centers on obesity as a theme, and there's only a couple of players that actually have an obesity drug. I think there's some attractive valuations for the long term, but also we see looming pressure from many large products that are going to be losing patent protection over the next 3 years. None of that's new, but I think it creates enough diverging currents within the broader biopharma space that we think neutral is the right place to be, given that divergence and given some of those overhangs.
Well, Eric, thank you for sharing those considerations and your thinking when it comes to positioning within the group. You did mention themes a moment ago. Oftentimes we talk about investment themes here on Top of the Morning. So to follow up on that, what are some notable themes within the group that are on your radar at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think I touched on really three that seem to dominate conversations, both from the management teams and from investors. Obesity, and we do have an obesity and diabetes tactical theme that we point investors towards. But that really, you know, I think about the conversations that I both hear companies having with investors and that I have with clients, you know, obesity and the obesity treatments, the GLP-1 drugs specifically, really are taking up much of the oxygen in the room. Medical utilization, which I discussed before, is another key topic, and I think the debate is around whether it's temporary or structural in terms of the increased utilization that we're seeing. I lean towards it being a temporary dynamic, but that's far from certain. And then lastly, as I mentioned, China and the pressure on those end markets and whether and then when a recovery will occur in those end markets. I'd say those are the three, at least, that dominate the discussion companies are having with investors so far, at least this year.
Then in terms of risks, headwinds to the group could include implications of the upcoming 2024 election, the outcome there. What are you monitoring? What should investors, participants in the group be mindful of?
Well, so I discussed China, so I don't think I need to go into that beyond saying I think it's manageable, just in part because of what I think is fairly limited or manageable, modest exposure through most of the large global healthcare companies. You know, you mentioned the election. My sense is the election is likely less of a focal point this cycle than it has been in the prior two or three. But there's always headline risk, as I'm sure everyone knows. Possibly some additional debate around drug pricing, which was mentioned in the president's State of the Union address last week. I think expansion of the Medicare drug pricing negotiation is unlikely in a closely divided Congress, which I think is probably the likely outcome post this election, without calling it for one party or the other. I think it'll be closely divided. So regardless of who is president next year, I think getting meaningful drug pricing legislation through will be a heavy lift. But it's worth recalling that the Trump administration did propose more onerous drug pricing reform, which at the time was not vigorously pursued by the Trump administration, but it's possible that could reemerge as a talking point. And quite honestly, could even find some support within Democrats in Congress, given how they've positioned on drug pricing. I think, you know, betting on bipartisanship in this country and in any Congress is a low odds bet. But if I look at where there's an outside risk that probably isn't being talked about a lot, it's that you could see some kind of joining of more populist forces to push additional drug pricing legislation. Again, I wouldn't put high odds on it, but I think it's a greater than zero possibility. Then, you know, ongoing regulatory pressure, but again, that's perennial. It's not really new, but I'd say that's something, you know, to continually watch out for with healthcare. And then much like the broader market, you know, the concentration of positioning within healthcare and the dominance really of one theme, obesity, it represents a risk if the market becomes concerned about that theme. or just the buying demand is could be exhausted at some point, although it doesn't seem like we're in quite yet at that point. But concentration represents a risk. And I think, as I mentioned, obesity is really taking up a lot of the oxygen in the room. And I generally think it's healthier for a sector when there are more vibrant themes being discussed than fewer.
Well, Eric, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning, spending some time today with our listeners, our clients, and for sharing with them your thinking when it comes to the group, what's on your radar, as well as the guidance when it comes to positioning. And I do look forward to having you back, but thank you again for joining us today.
All right, great. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Eric. Again, today we have been speaking with Eric Poniker, healthcare sector strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Just in terms of related resources, Eric did make mention of the U.S. tactical equity theme, diabetes and obesity. That white paper, along with Eric's healthcare equity preference list, is available up on ubs.com/CIO for your reference. Though if you are a client of UBS, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive copies of those resources directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.